It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
A militia group in Central African Republic turns from violence to politics. An advocacy group marks World AIDS Day by saying the pandemic is at a tipping point. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. An official of the anti-Balaka militia in the Central African Republic, Patrice Edouard Ingasona, says his group will lay down its weapons and become a political movement. The new movement will be renamed the Central African Party for Unity and Development. The CAR has been rocked by sectarian violence since the mostly Muslim Salika rebel coalition ousted the government of President Francois Bozizé, which it said had committed abuses against Muslims in the northeast. That prompted a violent backlash by mostly Christian militia groups. Marking World AIDS Day today, the advocacy group One Campaign says the world has reached the beginning of the end of the AIDS pandemic. But it says while the number of people newly infected with HIV over the past year is lower than the number of HIV-positive people who have access to medicine, the end of AIDS is not around the corner. South Africa still has the highest number of HIV-AIDS cases in the world, over 6 million as of last year. Mark Haywood is founder of Treatment Action Campaign.
There's been enormous strides forward, particularly in the last 5 years. You know, you'll remember that in the early 2000s, HIV was mired in controversy. The government couldn't even say that HIV causes AIDS. It didn't want to make antiretroviral treatment available to people. As we sit here today, there are 2.5 million people who are on antiretroviral treatment.
Nearly one quarter of black African women between the ages of 15 and 49 are infected with HIV. The study by South African Health Group says more than 12% of South Africa's population was infected with HIV in 2012, and it found knowledge about how it's transmitted to be falling. This is VOA News. Nigeria's top Islamist body Sunday accused authorities of failing to protect citizens from attacks by Boko Haram militants and urged Muslims to, quote, take all defensive measures under the law to protect themselves. The Jamaatu Nasri Islam, umbrella group for Muslim people across Nigeria, issued the statement Sunday following coordinated bomb and gun attacks at the central mosque in the northern city Kano Friday that killed at least 100 worshippers and wounded scores of others. Suspected Boko Haram militants late Saturday reportedly raided the mostly Christian town of Shani in northeast Borno State. Residents there say scores of people were killed, although police are unable to verify the death toll. The UN Refugee Agency says some 50 people were killed last week by Boko Haram insurgents in Borno State town of Damasak, forcing thousands to flee to neighboring Niger. Lisa Schlein reports.
UN refugee spokesman Adrian Edwards tells VOA people are being pursued by the militants right up to the riverbanks.
It's extremely dangerous. People are fleeing very quickly, very fast. A lot of women, a lot of elderly, a lot of children amongst those coming across, reporting real difficulties.
Damasak is the second large attack mounted by Boko Haram close to the Nigeria-Niger border in less than 2 months. The first attack on the Nigerian village of Malan Fatori on October 5th prompted 1,000 people to flee. UNHCR aid workers in Difa say people are still arriving in Niger from Nigeria. They say most are waiting for boats to cross the river separating the two countries, while others try to swim across to safety. The UNHCR says the regular influxes of Nigerian refugees and returning Niger nationals are placing a heavy burden on Difa, a remote and economically underdeveloped region. The authorities in Niger say more than 100,000 people have fled to Niger since May 2013, when the Nigerian government declared a state of emergency in the northeastern states. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Kenya, an improvised explosive device wounded one person Sunday in the town of Garissa, close to the Somali border. It comes a week after nearly 30 people aboard a bus were executed by Somali-based al-Shabaab militants in the country's northeast. The United States joined the African Union Sunday in congratulating the people of Namibia for exercising their democratic right to vote in Friday's national election. The AU called the continent's first nationwide e-vote free and fair. Results are still being verified. Canadian Michel Jean has been named General Secretary of the International Organization of Mostly French-Speaking Countries. She becomes the first woman to lead the organization, which voted Sunday in Dakar. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, the first day of December, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Namibia delays announcing Friday's presidential election results.
We had planned to officially announce the national consolidated tally today. Unfortunately, due to some verification processes that are currently going on, we had decided to delay the official announcement of results until tomorrow.
Theo Mujoro is the Director of Operations for the Electoral Commission of Namibia. In Liberia, the Supreme Court has put a hold on that country's December 16 special senatorial election. African migrants continue their deadly crossing of the Mediterranean Sea, and Boko Haram violence ravages northern Nigeria.
We are not safe at all. We are not safe. This is why yesterday there's a burst of the one tire. All the people leave their goods and leave their properties, ran away.
Aminu Galba is a resident of Kano in northern Nigeria. Zimbabwe and Zambia introduced a unit visa to promote tourism. And a police officer who shot and killed an unarmed black teenager in the U.S. state of Missouri has resigned. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Electoral Commission of Namibia has delayed announcing the results from Friday's presidential and parliamentary elections. Those results were supposed to have been declared on Saturday or yesterday, Sunday. Early results on Saturday show the presidential candidate of the ruling SWAPO party leading with 77% of the vote, with about 10% of 121 constituencies counted. Theo Mujoro, Director of Operations for the Electoral Commission of Namibia, says the commission delayed releasing the final results after observing mathematical errors in the results obtained from constituencies.
We had planned to officially announce the national consolidated tallies today. Unfortunately, due to some verification processes that are currently going on, we had decided to delay the official announcement of results until tomorrow.
Could you specify, you say, due to some verification problems? What are the problems?
The problems primarily is that from the returns that we received from the constituencies, at least from some of the constituencies, we have detected some mathematical errors. And what we are then doing is that we are contacting the returning officers so that they may provide us with the source documents for us to be able to ascertain for ourselves and to effect the necessary corrections on these returns. It's important that we do these corrections so that if and when we do the final announcements, we are pretty sure that what we are informing the public is the correct and accurate reflection of the election process.
The African Union Observer Mission said that the political environment leading to the election was generally peaceful and calm. But there's something I think they have expressed concern about, that is, quote, unregulated flow of money during elections, which they believe could disadvantage small political parties. Does the government fund or the parties provide funding for themselves?
What happens is that the parties that are represented in the National Assembly receive money from government, and this money is distributed to the political parties on a proportional basis. In other words, the more seats you have in the National Assembly, you get a bigger piece of this pie, of this cake. So in terms of how that money is utilized by the parties, I think it's entirely dependent on individual political parties to decide how they utilize their funds in terms of running their day-to-day operations. But in terms of the actual election campaign activities, government does not set aside a budget specifically for financing campaign activities of various political parties. Each party do their own fundraising, and they basically conduct their electioneering campaigns using their own funds.
I think the observation that's made by the African Union is that the weeks leading up to the election, that some business people were providing buses to the ruling party, but similar thing was not done. Did the Electoral Commission notice that?
Obviously, I've been following the media, and I did notice that. It's been reported. But we have no legislation in this country that prohibits private individuals from financing specific political parties' campaign activities. Having said that, personally, I do not see anything wrong with that. anybody, any citizen can make a contribution to the campaign activities of a particular political party.
Theo Mujoro is Director of Operations for the Electoral Commission of Namibia. You are speaking with me from the capital, Windhoek. The Liberian Supreme Court has put on hold the country's special senatorial election that is supposed to be held on December 16. The Justice in Chambers, Philip Banks, reportedly told the National Elections Commission to inform all political parties to halt all activities associated with the election. This comes after a coalition of former government officials and representatives of some political parties petitioned the court to stay the election on the grounds that holding it would violate the constitution as well as risk spreading the Ebola virus. Alaric Topa is national chairman of the National Democratic Coalition and one of the plaintiffs. He says the Elections Commission was wrong to announce the holding of the special senatorial elections when Liberia has not yet been declared Ebola free.
As a matter of fact, the Elections Commission postponed the election because of the deadly Ebola outbreak. As far as we are concerned, the disease is still in the country. The country is still infected, and health authorities have not declared the country Ebola-free. We therefore think that it is improper under the circumstances for the Elections Commission to abruptly announce the holding of elections during a very short period of time that will not allow the Election Commission to undertake all those activities that are required as preconditions for the holding of free, fair, equitable elections.
Are you not concerned also about the constitutional crisis that could arise if these elections are not held this year? That is, what happens to those senators whose term would have expired if these elections are not held?
There is already a constitutional crisis. The elections were not held on October 14, as determined by the Constitution. If the elections are not held, then when the term of office expires, those senators will have to leave the Capitol building. A determination will have to be made as to when elections can be held in order to replace them. Well, there will be no legal basis for their continuous existence in the Capitol building.
You mentioned the Ebola. Ebola, I think, now seems to be on the decline in Liberia. And I think either the president or someone said that people should take precaution during the campaign not to spread the disease further. Is that not enough?
One case of Ebola entered Liberia and broke the country down and exposed the weakness of the health system. Our schools are not open. I would have thought that the opening of schools would be a better possibility of testing the decline of Ebola. But as it were, you can understand that it is impossible to have election campaigns that will disallow for intensive contact interaction between people. And we think that it is important for us to fight against a situation where there will be renewed outbreaks of the Ebola. On the decline, well, we appreciate and welcome the positive development, but I think we should not also undertake actions that will allow us to get into new outbreaks of the Ebola.
Campaign is underway in Liberia for these special elections. What do you want to happen?
Interpret the Constitution. It is not for me to put forward a particular position that will be the outcome of the court because the matter is already before the court. When the matter was outside of the court, we made some proposals, some suggestions. We wrote the President pro tempore and distinguished members of the Senate, we wrote the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the honorable members of the House of Representatives. They did not listen to us. Initially, he found the Senate had opposed the holding of elections, but then later on proceeded to agree with the lower house that there was need for election under these circumstances. We don't agree with that. That is why we proceeded to the Supreme Court.
Alaric Topa is the national chairman of the National Democratic Coalition. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. The death toll from a Friday attack at a mosque in northern Nigeria has risen to more than 80 and at least 100 wounded. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack, which bears the marks of the terrorist group Boko Haram. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan urged Nigerians to remain united to confront what he called the common enemy. Zlatika Hoke has more.
Three explosions followed by gunshots caused panic at the Grand Mosque in Kano as Friday prayers began and the building was crowded with worshippers. The mosque is associated with one of the country's most influential Muslim authorities, who recently called for Nigerians to take up arms against the militant group Boko Haram. Kano has been the target of past Boko Haram attacks, and its residents lived in fear even before the Friday attack.
We are not safe at all. We are not safe. This is why yesterday there's a burst of the one tire. All the people leave their goods and leave their properties, ran away.
Boko Haram is responsible for at least 1,500 deaths this year in northern Nigeria. The country's Red Cross Society says the violence has displaced 1 million people who desperately need emergency relief.
The International Federation of Red Cross has launched an appeal on behalf of the Nigerian Red Cross Society in return of 480 million naira to respond to the people affected by the insurgency in the northeast Nigeria.
Many villagers from northeastern Nigeria have fled across the border to Cameroon. Others have found shelter in camps like this one outside the northeastern city of Yola.
Our home has been burned, our churches, many of our brothers have been killed. Everything, nothing left for us now again.
Boko Haram's campaign of death and destruction since 2009 has prevented economic development of northern Nigeria, turning it into one of the poorest regions on the continent. Neighboring Cameroon also has suffered. Several cross-border raids by Boko Haram have frightened tourists that once flocked to Cameroon's national parks.
They say the far north is in the danger zone, so we need ambassadors to help us, to make people come. Without foreigners, our economy will suffer.
Border closures have frozen trade between Nigeria and Cameroon, hurting Cameroon's merchants.
Since these events began, trade has stopped. The Nigerians don't come to their food here.
The militants are suspected in several other brutal attacks this November that have killed more than 100 people in northern Nigeria. Clarissa Hope, VOA News, Washington.
Today is Monday, the first day of December. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe and Zambia have introduced a single shared visa to lure tourists to the mighty Victoria Falls spanning their border. Angola, Botswana, and Namibia are set to join the program in 6 months if the pilot project is successful, and other countries in the region may join later. But as Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the plan could face resistance from some countries like South Africa.
Citizens of Canada, Japan, the United States, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, Russia, France, Australia, Sweden, and Germany are among those from 40 countries who now need only one visa to enter both Zimbabwe and Zambia. The governments of these southern African countries hope to increase the flow of tourists to Victoria Falls, which can be viewed from either countryside of the Zambezi River. Zimbabwe Tourism Minister Walter Muzembi says great things are coming for Africa.
We are doing what other progressive economies in the world have done. You enter one European country, you enter 27. So we are saying this is the first little step towards the promulgation of a SADC Univisa.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe, as the current chair of Southern African Development Community, is pushing for a so-called Univisa for the region and eventually for the entire continent. The idea has been discussed since 1998, but has now gained new impetus thanks to the financial support from the World Bank. Swedish ambassador to Zimbabwe, Lars Ronas, says he is optimistic the project will succeed.
Well, generally, I think it's very good when countries and governments facilitate for people to move across between countries.
Many African nations have maintained colonial-era visa requirements, with countries like South Africa still requiring visas for citizens of most other African countries. There are concerns in some such countries that if the use of Univisa spreads in Africa, it will open the door to a flood of refugees from war-torn countries to relatively peaceful and stable countries like South Africa. But for Zimbabwe, those fears are secondary to hopes that the Univisa will stimulate a slowly recovering tourism sector. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The International Organization for Migration says thousands of migrants, mostly from Africa, continue to make the deadly Mediterranean Sea crossing from North Africa to Europe. The group says hundreds have been rescued in recent days from boats that have capsized and some have died. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration says more than 161,000 migrants have arrived safely in Italy since the beginning of this year. Many others were not so lucky. At least 3,200 have gone missing at sea and are presumed drowned. In November alone, more than 8,000 people have been rescued at sea. More than 5,000 migrants arrived in Italy in the last 10 days after being rescued by the ships plying waters in the Channel of Sicily after their fragile smugglers' boats had capsized. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says desperation pushes the migrants to make this dangerous journey despite the terrible risks.
This time of year, the waters are getting increasingly perilous, very wintry conditions, and yet the amount of people crossing doesn't seem to be going down significantly. But we note that most of the people being rescued in these past few weeks are sub-Saharan Africans from Gambia, Mali, Senegal, Nigeria, and Ghana. Although our team reported 575 Syrians came ashore this week.
The Italian government plans to close its Mare Nostrum Sea rescue mission by the end of the year. That operation, which has saved the lives of more than 100,000 migrants, is being replaced by a European Union operation called Triton. Its mission is limited to controlling the borders and carrying out search and rescue operations if necessary. Critics of Mare Nostrum argue the patrols encourage migrants to make the dangerous sea journeys. The IOM disagrees. Millman says the agency believes people are fleeing their home countries because of the terrible conditions that exist.
Either part of the large population of 200,000 to 300,000 overseas workers who are stranded in Libya and therefore subject to exploitation and forced, coerced transit across the Mediterranean by criminal groups, or it's people continuing to flee places of strife and taking the same trans-Sahara routes to Libya.
IOM says it does not know what impact the end of Mare Nostrum will have on life-saving operations carried out at sea. But agency officials say the Mediterranean still needs to be patrolled. Otherwise, they say many lives will be put in danger. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The resignation of a Missouri police officer who shot and killed an unarmed black teenager earlier this year is not expected to quell anger or end protests that erupted after a grand jury declined to criminally charge the officer. Former Ferguson policeman Darren Wilson, who is white, insists he acted as he was trained when he shot 18-year-old Michael Brown, a case that has focused attention on often tense relations between American law enforcement and minority communities. VOA's Michael Bowman reports.
Yo, what's your name? What's your name? Tell me your name and number.
Get out of here! Go! Go!
After a week of vociferous demonstrations, the man at the center of the controversy, Darren Wilson, said he hoped his resignation would allow Ferguson to heal. Wilson hinted at his departure in an ABC News interview conducted late last week when asked if he hoped to continue serving in uniform.
Do you really think it's possible? I mean, do you think they would accept me? Do you think it'd be safe for me?
Throughout last week, protests continued in Ferguson and spread far and wide to Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, and New York City, where demonstrators targeted a nationally televised Thanksgiving Day parade.
It seems like nobody cares about us when our children get shot.
I'm upset. I have a 16-year-old son. It could have been him.
Others give the grand jury the benefit of the doubt, but say Wilson had no choice but to resign.
And there's still such a large, great grudge against him, unfortunately.
Wilson denies that racial bias or anger. Wilson denies that racial bias or anger played a role when he shot Michael Brown.
The only emotion I'd ever felt was fear, and then it was survival and training.
Wilson's resignation is not enough, according to St. Louis, Missouri Alderman Antonio French.
But I think there are many more resignations that need to happen in order for this community to begin healing. I think the Ferguson police chief, I think it's impossible for this community to move forward with him still in that role.
Although shielded from criminal prosecution, Wilson could still face civil penalties. The U.S. Justice Department is investigating the case. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with hockey. Kenyan defending champions Telkom Orange went on the rampage, thrashing Zimbabwe's Bulawayo Athletics Club 7-0 to retain the women's title at the Africa Club Hockey Championships at the Kumalo Stadium in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe on Sunday. This is Telkom Orange's seventh title. Meanwhile, in an all-Egyptian final, defending champions Sharkia pipped Egypt Police by a solitary goal to retain the men's title. This is Sharkia's fourth consecutive Africa Club title. Turning to basketball, Angolan defending champions Interclub outclassed Kenya's United States International University 101-66. Nigeria's Dolphins pipped Republic of Congo's INSS 78-76 as Angola's Primero de Agosto beat Tunisia's CS Sfaxien 66-50 at the Africa Women's Club Basketball Championships in Sfax, Tunisia on Sunday. Early on Saturday in Group A, Angola's Primero de Agosto dismissed Nigeria's First Bank 87-77 and Tunisia's CS Sfaxien beat Kenya Port Authority 75-58. In Group B, Angola's Interclub beat Republic of Congo's INSS 67-55 and Tunisia's SC Police Orientation outplayed Kenya's United States International University 78-59. Staying in Tunisia, Egypt's Sporting Alexandria beat Tunisia's U.S. Monastir 92-75 at the African Men's Basketball Club Champions Cup Zone 1 qualifiers in Tunis on Sunday. Algeria's CRB Der El Beida outplayed Morocco's Al Moshiema 65-54 as Tunisia's ES Radez dismissed Algeria's GS Petrolias 84-70. Turning to athletics, Uganda's Timothy Toroitich emerged victorious at the Alcobendas International Cross Country Meet in Spain on Sunday. Kenyan Emmanuel Bett was runner-up ahead of his compatriot and reigning world cross country champion Japheth Korir, while Kenyan Doris Chengewo claimed victory in the women's event. Finally, in football, Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports edged Egyptian visitors El Ahly 2-1 in the opening leg of the Orange Africa Confederations Cup final in Abidjan on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, the first day of December.
I wish to call on Nigerian youths to shun political talking because politicians will only use and abandon them, no matter whatever happened to them. I also wish politicians to play the game with the fear of God, who is the giver of leadership. I am Prince John Ushie Obaneko in Obudu Cattle Ranch, Cross River State, Nigeria. Thank you, VOA.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A Christian militia in the Central African Republic says it will lay down its weapons and become a political movement. That's it for this Monday, December 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very productive week.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.